Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Good evening and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Learning to Dance in the Rain, a book by Lori and Brian McDermott, and that can be found at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. Our guest tonight is Dr. Bernie Siegel, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. And how was your day today, Bob?
Okay, and it is Halloween. Happy Halloween to everybody. I think we got pranked. We had a little.
We got pranked by Fios.
Phone lines here.
Phone lines were dead.
Yeah.
So we're a little off to a late start, but we're good.
See a couple of articles. I see you've got one on your desk, and I have one here. And the headline, I imagine, is not what it seems. You have the
very appropriate
the front page of Newsday that says the dead
can vote.
The dead can vote. Okay. And what is that? I can guess what that's about. Why don't you tell me?
Well, from a political standpoint, this is all about them going through the rolls of registered voters and seeing that in the past some odd 10 years, that people who have dead, who are dead or who have been dead have actually come in and voted, or at least that's what they're implying is happening. And it caught my eye for two reasons. One, I do have a background in politics and elections, and particularly how voter fraud takes place. And over the years, I've seen situations where there have been somebody who's deceased show up as having voted. But that's usually fraud. And my argument here is, since they have such wonderful numbers of these people on Long Island, New York, that are dead and voting, that why would it not be the dead person voting? Particularly if they're still registered to vote.
Okay.
Let me just pose it to you this way.
Right.
We've gone to seances. We've witnessed physical mediumship. I particularly have had many afterlife encounters where things that cannot be explained by basic science has happened, and I've witnessed it. So if they can move trumpets through a room and make things appear and disappear, then why can't they just push a lever in a polling booth?
How do they, and they would have had to sign their name at the polling place, right?
Well, not necessarily. They're saying that somebody signed in under their name, yet they have enough votes, to go with the number of people who have signed in.
Of course, well, I mean, there have been cases, and particularly in seances that you mentioned, and physical mediumship seances, where people have written notes.
Right.
You know,
so they can sign in.
So they could sign in, you know, theoretically. So that's interesting. I'm certainly open to it.
You are. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. So this is a very interesting article for me because, of course, Newsday isn't going to look at it the way I did.
Yeah.
I was excited.
Well, I was looking at an article that appeared in the Daily Mail in the UK. It's pretty disturbing, but it raises a lot of interesting questions. And the article talks about, I like the way they say an extreme yoga fanatic. I don't like the way they
yeah, I don't like
an extreme yoga fanatic drowned in a quarry after an experiment to achieve enlightenment through a near-death experience went tragically wrong. and they mentioned this, they put it that as if he's a spiritualist. Luke Monroe's believed that by pushing his body to its limits and catching hypothermia, by doing that, he could unlock the secrets of the afterlife. It goes on to say that the 27-year-old hoped to see the future. He hoped to acquire psychic powers and enjoy an out-of-body experience known as astral projection by nearly dying. But this risky experiment went tragically wrong, and a coroner today ruled Mr. Monroe's died of a consequence of a near-death experience which resulted in physical death. They go on to talk about people saying that he became obsessed with near-death experiences, meditation, and spirituality, and so on. When you look at that, I was reminded, what was that old movie we watched, Flatliners?
Oh, yeah, that's a very old movie.
Very old movie, I recall it vividly. There was a bunch of medical students, as I recall.
Yeah, I think it was Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, and they read about near-death experiences, and they wanted to try to induce them, you know, themselves. And it illustrates a lot of things. I mean, how badly some people, you know, yearn for these so-called otherworldly connections, you know, to catch a glimpse of the afterlife or to make a connection. And do you worry sometimes about, as we read about all of these reports, specifically like a near-death experiences? I mean, of course, there are some negative experiences, but the overwhelming majority are very, very positive. And they depict, a wonderful existence on the other side. Does it concern you at all that some people would conceivably either take risks like this or, even worse, you know, take their own lives because of what is going to welcome them on the other side?
Well, you know, there's two arguments I can make. And my more favored argument is if they experiment with that and they succeed, I don't know if that's the right word, and they cross over and don't return, then was that not their pathway to begin with? Because we hear so often that somebody who has a near-death experience has been told it's not your time, you have to return.
Right.
So if it was premature, if this person's crossing were premature, he would have been told that and he would have popped back into his body, so to speak, mm-hmm. or been sent back or be rescued in some way, shape, or form. That didn't happen. So I would have to believe that this whole series of events that led him to experiment with this and to cross over and not come back was some larger scheme that he was a part of, if it's to teach other people not to do it, maybe, or to teach his loved ones a lesson, or whatever comes out of this, or maybe many things come out of this, that this is part of the scheme.
Yeah, it could very well be. I worry that, you know, some people could get the impression, though, that that everyone can be resuscitated. You know, the fact is, very few people are. The overwhelming majority do not, you know, get resuscitated.
Right, and it doesn't say in the article, did he have some sort of a plan B?
Hey, he just did
it with nobody around him.
It's before plunging into a flooded clay pit in this place called Cornwall, he was wearing a life jacket and goggles, and he submerged himself in the bath to practice. And his body was discovered in the pit 2 days later, so something apparently, you know, went wrong.
Yeah, like he didn't have a spotter there who was going to pull him out.
Yeah, you know, and then, of course, the article, I wouldn't say it's great journalism, and they like to lump all these things together. They say, you know, Mr. Monroe was obsessed with aliens and theories about the afterlife, you know, and was also a follower of conspiracy theories. You know, how often do we see that they group, you know, if A and B, then it must be C and D and E. You know,
they probably interviewed a couple of people, and they said, "Well, I think he did this, and maybe he did that, and maybe." So now the journalist, who we know, journalists today are not the same journalists we've had, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Right.
They just write to write. They don't even check their facts half the time.
Well, it just shows you, and we've certainly seen that how people, we're not talking about the extremes of near-death experiences, but how many people yearn for any type of experience. You know, we think it's so common, and it is to a certain extent, but there are many people that don't have experiences and they would like more than anything else in the world. And that could be something as simple as having a, you know, a dream visit or...
Right, but I don't see this guy as one of those, because if he were truly an avid yoga person, he would be having his own experiences.
Right, and the thing is... And if you're seeking enlightenment, when, you know, the enlightenment could is a pathway that many people find through yoga. You know, why do you have to seek it in near-death experience?
So it doesn't make too much sense.
We're going to go to our break. We have a wonderful guest tonight, Dr. Bernie Siegel, medical doctor, very well known. So stay with us, and we will be back in a few.
Don't miss Forever Family Foundation's 7th Annual Conference Weekend, November 9th and 10th, this year in warm and sunny San Diego, California. In Search of the Afterlife, Experiencing, Communicating, Connecting to Another World, is designed for general audiences interested in learning about evidence of an afterlife. Attendees will be treated to cutting-edge presentations of evidence that we survive our physical deaths, as well as demonstrations of spirit communication by certified mediums. Add on the optional Friday night fundraiser dinner featuring medium Kim Russo, host of The Haunting of TV show, and stay an extra day for Media Monday. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Learning to Dance in the Rain, a true story about life beyond death. When 21-year-old Maya dies in a tragic car crash, her parents begin to experience profound synchronicities, prophetic dreams, guidance from mediums, and the undeniable truth that death is not the end. Lori and Brian McDermott share their story, hoping to help others find strength and inspiration to face whatever storms life may bring. Learn more about this important book at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. That's www.learningtodanceintherain.net.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Bernie Siegel. Our sponsor is Learning to Dance in the Rain, a book by Lori and Brian McDermott, and that can be found at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. Bob?
And Bernie Siegel is a physician who has cared for and counseled innumerable people whose mortality have been threatened by illness. He embraces a philosophy of living and dying that stands at the forefront of the medical ethics and spiritual issues that our society grapples with today. Bernie believes that in the next decade, the roles of consciousness, spirituality, non-local healing, body memory, and heart energy will all be explored more intensively as scientific subjects. Bernie has dedicated himself to humanizing the medical establishment and empowering patients. In addition to being a sought-after speaker around the world, he's the author of many books, including his bestseller, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, and his latest book, The Art of Healing, Uncovering Your Inner Wisdom and Potential for Self-Healing. Bernie's website is BernieSiegelMD.com, and that's Bernie, B-E-R-N-I-E, Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L-M-D.com. Welcome, Bernie. Glad to have you on the show.
Thanks, Bob.
And I have to be honest, a good place to start is when I think back of most of the medical doctors that I've encountered over the years, I'd have to say that most of them seem more interested in treating symptoms with popular meds, and really did they show any real sincere interest in determining the possible causes, but for that matter, did they show any genuine interest in my overall well-being? And you seem to be a physician that broke the mold. You treat people as a whole person, and you even refer to yourself as a Jungian surgeon.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about what you mean.
I mean, what you're saying, I mean, brings up so many important things that I talk about. I really feel that in medical school, we should have help analyzing why we became doctors and why we're choosing certain specialties. And I mean that literally. I mean, it's one thing to be accepted, but as a dean said, students write, I am fascinated by the human body. You know,
right.
And guess who shows up in it? People. See, but if you're focused on the body, you're in big trouble. And so are your patients. I mean, I became a doctor for what I call healthy reasons. And that's why I got into trouble. I liked people. I wanted to fix things. You know?
Right.
I was an artist as a kid. I wanted to use my hands, so I figured, be a surgeon. You know, you'll be able to do things. But then the pain of all the things you can't fix and loss and death. I mean, I literally was going to become a veterinarian to try to make it a little less painful until one of my patients, who was a veterinarian, I said to him when he was visiting one day, you got to help me get into veterinary school. He said, don't. I said, why not? He said, because people bring the pets in. You know, again, it's focusing on the people. Jack Kevorkian could have ended up running a hospice instead of killing people and ending up in jail if someone had helped him understand why he wanted to be a pathologist, why death was an issue with him. And let me say again, getting back to drawings and pictures, I said to a whole class of medical students, draw yourself working as a doctor. See, I don't know what enters your mind. One extreme, and I put this in the book, and the other extreme is in my book, was a picture with no human being in it. And think of what the instructions were. All you see are equipment of all kinds.
Right.
The majority of the class, literally like 98%, drew themselves sitting behind a desk with their diploma on the wall and no patient in the room. And the other extreme, which I love, which was really being a doctor, is a student kneeling in front of a woman in a wheelchair with his arm around her. So he's become like a one with her, and he's handing her a tissue. Now, he's got a stethoscope around his neck, see, but he's not using the stethoscope to touch her. He's handing her a tissue and embracing her. That's what being a doctor is about. You need to treat the experience. I always, well, in workshops, have a story where, since Thanksgiving is getting close, I tell it as if it's true. I said, we had a teenager over the other, you know, night at Thanksgiving, and he got undressed in the middle of dinner, sat under the table, and said, I'm a turkey. And I say to people, what would you do? Well, the answer is, you get undressed and sit down with him. Because then you can say, I'm a turkey too. And
right.
He knows that you understand what he's going through, and then, you know, with time, you get him dressed, let him still be a turkey, and, you know, with therapy, you slowly get him back to being a normal child again. But to sit down next to him and say, oh, well, you got to get up and get dressed, you know, and the same with patients. We have to know what they're experiencing. Mm. One of our sons this morning had a headache. I said, what does it feel like? And he started giving me a diagnosis. I said, you've got to stop thinking and, you know, pay attention to your feelings. I asked you what it felt like, not what your diagnosis is. You know, like it's a migraine headache. That doesn't
right.
tell me what it feels like. But
yeah.
I cured a lady who was about to be hospitalized when she also had a migraine. And I said, what does it feel like? Oh, it's pressure. I said, think about the pressure in your life. What else fits that word? And 15 minutes later, she was on the way home to straighten out her marriage.
Yeah.
I mean, that impressed the nurse, you know, because the nurse looked at me and said, her headache's gone. She's going home. It's her marriage. You see, because I had stepped out of the room and the nurse came out to tell me.
Right.
Yeah. And so,
that's certainly what you talk about going within, you know, and quite frankly, in a lot of your books, I mean, here you're a medical doctor, you're a scientist, but you sound more like a spiritualist. I mean, you talk about taking the lid off your consciousness and going within. So when you say, you know, like something like going within, you're referring to making connections to a universal consciousness or a guiding intelligence?
Well, to both, to your own and to the universal. Because again, in drawings and dreams, past, present, and future show up. See, our past shows up with numbers. I mean, somebody puts 21 drops of blood under a broken heart, and I say, what happened when you were 21? And she was sexually abused multiple times. And I saw her drawing because doctors said, we can't cure her. We don't know what's going on. But as soon as it's what happened when you were 21, boom, everything changed. Because now it wasn't just buried inside of her. I mean, in the book, there's a picture from a reporter who I knew was going to drive me crazy because she didn't think much of me or my work. So I said, draw a picture and then we'll talk after I'm finished with the patient. She drew one hand on a clock pointed at 12. So I said to her to sort of shake her up, you know, rather than say, why is 12 important, which I would do with normal patients. I said, what happened when you were 12 years old? And again, she broke into tears and started telling me, and then the whole interview is different. So we store our life. Well, we know that from transplanting organs. I mean it literally. So
right.
The consciousness and the intellect, however, are two separate entities. And I really, the more I read of Jung, the more I think when we get into the consciousness aspect, and not the thinking aspect, but the consciousness, that's when we really communicate with the body and can have so-called self-induced healing occur because you change your life. See, Solzhenitsyn used a beautiful term in his book, Cancer Ward. He talked about self-induced healing. And, I mean, one of the men is reading about it in a book and says, and then the next paragraph is, and it fluttered out of the great open book like a rainbow-colored butterfly. When I read that, see, I knew he's a turkey like I'm a turkey. He knows. He understands.
Right.
Because the butterfly is a symbol of transformation. The rainbow is your life in order. Every color has meaning. I laugh, you know, because it proves it at the hospital when they make identification tags and they put a color behind your picture. The attending physician's got purple, say a spiritual color. The administration got yellow, an energy color. The people, you know, like radiation therapy, blood drawing got red, which is an emotional color. And even Stop and Shop changed the shirts on their employees to purple and yellow. The management has purple. The employees have yellow. And you feel better with these people standing in front of you. It's sending you a message about them, too.
Yeah. We have a bunch of people that have been calling in. Would you mind taking a caller from a listener?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Okay, we have Lisa from North Carolina on line 4.
Okay. Hello, Lisa.
Hi. How are you doing?
Hi. Good. You're on with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Do you have a question for the good doctor?
Yes. I don't know how to make a complicated thing a short story long. You know what I mean? A long story short. But my paternal grandmother died when she was 95 and a half, exactly, and she's the only person, my whole family, on both sides, that ever made me feel unconditional love.
Mm.
She comes to me in dreams all the time. Can you please tell me why she keeps revisiting me? Is that specific enough?
Well, to keep you feeling loved. I always say the reason, see, when we have children, they're called children. When our children have children, they become grand. And when they have kids, they become great grand. So as we get older, we understand more about life. And we become great, you know, and grand at it. And we're less judgmental of our grandchildren. I mean, I've seen it. I'm a grandfather. So I've watched our kids being born. And because I did a lot of children's surgery, I said to the nurses, let me examine my son. And they looked at me like, you're insane. This is your child. You want to examine him, not love him? But when our grandchildren were born, I didn't say, let me examine him. I just wanted to pick him up and give him a big hug and love him. And that's the part. She's coming back to you. See, the body dies, consciousness doesn't. I can tell you endless stories from parents who have lost children and how the kids come back. And when I mean say that, I mean often in symbols, you know, like a child who collects butterflies and the father's walking in the woods one day and this gorgeous butterfly follows him. When he got home and looked it up in his son's book, it's a South American butterfly. So what's it doing in Connecticut? Yeah. And the same thing with your grandmother. I always tell people, look for pennies, like pennies from heaven, and look for signs, things that meant something to her. So she's there to let you know, because the most important thing in life and your health is feeling loved by your parents. Because if you don't feel loved by your parents, 95% of the people who said they weren't in a study had a serious illness by middle age. And those who said, I was loved, 25%. See, go into an assisted living facility with 80, 90, and 100-year-olds. You know, did your parents love you? And everybody says, sure, of course. Well, yeah. But go into high school and you get a different answer.
Exactly. Like, I'm in an abusive marriage. My son was not breathing when he was born. He has autism now. He is 9 minutes with, you know, oxygen, you know, but he has autism now. And my parents will not, they have the means to help me on my own, but not to get out of the abusive marriage. They did not let me move back in with them, but they let my brother, because he has a son, but I have two kids, and I'm not welcome there.
Well, let me say this. Don't let that keep robbing you of your lifetime. I'd say, you want to drive them nuts? Become a love warrior. I mean this, because I've done this with families like you're talking about. Call your parents up every day and say, I love you. That's it. Say, if you see them, say, I love you. Call them for three months and say, I love you. Then stop. Skip a day. And you're going to get a phone call from them saying, hey, I didn't hear from you. You okay? You forgot? You know, because in one family where there were alcoholic parents, after 3 months,
the
woman ran off to go to work because she was late, and the parents were in the street screaming, you forgot something. When she said, I got all my things. What are you talking about? You didn't say I love you today. And then they had a good cry and a bunch of hugs.
Yeah.
So they didn't have love. See, that's why they're you know, we become addicts searching for what we never felt as children. So we're looking for a reward. So give them the love. Be a love warrior. That's your weapon. And let your son know you love him. And get him a pet, a furry pet.
We have three.
Okay, good.
Because
that adds to your health.
God bless you.
Yeah, and relationship. Try to give him some, you might say, work in the sense of caring for it, whether it's changing the water, putting the food out. Because when we have relationships, it also contributes to our health and longevity.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for calling. You know, Bernie, you certainly, you talk about these things in your workshops and your lectures, but many may not be aware that you've had, quite a number of personal experiences of your own. And as I was reading about them, I was wondering, I mean, as they were happening, I mean, did you dismiss them initially? I mean, because of your medical training? I mean, did you have an awakening? What was that?
Which things are you referring to?
Well, I mean, you had a near-death experience.
Yeah,
I mean, you had communication.
I always say my life should have been a movie, or it should be maybe someday, because you know, as age four, I almost choked. I was imitating carpenters that were in our house because they had nails in their mouth. And I took a toy telephone apart and put it in my mouth, the dial pieces, and aspirated them and was choking to death. It blocked my larynx and I left my body. And in those days, you know, and as a four-year-old, I didn't know it wasn't normal. You know,
yeah.
I didn't discuss it with anybody, so my parents would write a book about it. But I found it fascinating, and I can tell you, like most kids who have that experience, they're upset when they don't die, because it's a hell of a lot more interesting being out of your body. You see, and I'm not the only one who can tell you that. Blind people born blind see when they have a near-death experience. You're
right.
Thinking, I was mad as hell. You know, when I didn't die, the first words out of my mouth were, "Who did that?" And it gave me a sense of God, as crazy as that may. I thought, oh, there must be a God, and God makes out schedules so you can't decide when you die. And, you know, and I went on from there. My mother was in no mood to talk about, you know, any interesting experiences, you know, to walk in and find that your kid almost died. But, because this happened in the bedroom, I was sitting on the bed.
Right.
You know, when I was maybe 50 years later, a friend of mine knew how busy I was and said to me, "Why are you living this life?" And I went into a trance and said to her, "Oh, my God. I mean, this is a phone call." See, I never sought out any of these things. So I always say to people, if I experience something, I believe it because, you know, it's not about do I believe in something. I had it happen. And I went into a trance, and just to summarize it, I killed people with a sword. You know, I was a knight, and I was killing. And I realized it had a lot to do with my faith, you know, who my Lord was, telling me to do things. And, oh, I mean, it helped me understand myself in many, many ways. And, you know, and why the story of Abraham and Isaac always bothered me. You know, how can a father say, okay, I'll kill my son? Why didn't he say, hey, God, let me, you know, I'll take my own life. Leave the kid alone. He never bargained. And it taught me a lot because I needed to have faith and have the right Lord. So I learned a lot. And even why I shaved my head about that time. Reading Jung, he talked about the tonsure, T-O-N-S-U-R-E, what monks do when they shave their head to uncover spirituality. When I read that story, I thought, oh, my God. I mean, I knew that was me. And all I had known was, I got to shave my head. I have to shave my head. And this was in the 70s when our sons were mortified because their hair's down to their shoulders and their father goes to the barber and gets his head shaved. but I realized I didn't have help. So if I'd had therapy, I might have had a therapist say, hey, did you ever consider that something else you need to uncover, not just make your head, you know, bare and show skin? And so those were things that evolved. And as I say, doing a drawing for Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, I couldn't believe how much she knew about my life from a drawing that was a scene that I created for a guided imagery, you know, a place to take a walk. Oh, and one other really mystical thing. On that walk, the person directing it said, you'll meet an inner guide. And a man walks up and says, my name is George. And he had, I mean, like a gown on and a funny cap on his head and, you know, but anyway, okay, George. So we talked and I would keep meeting him twice at a spiritual center in Connecticut called Mercy Center. I have been lecturing once, to a group, the other at a funeral. I spoke after both talks. People came up to me. One woman said, and I knew I didn't give the first talk. The first time it happened. Now I don't even prepare. I just go and talk because
right.
I know, you know, there's a greater consciousness that will use me and I'll just talk. And she came up, said, the first woman said, I heard you before. That was better than usual. I agreed with that. The second one said, there was a man standing in front of you for the entire lecture. So I drew his picture and it's George. And he has a big, he has a big full beard. So, I mean, he's not a normal looking man. You know, so you'd say, well, how do I know that was him? I mean, and then the second time at a Christian funeral, I'm standing in the hallway after the funeral And Algar Worrell, who was a mystic and healer, also knew the man who died was there. She came over to me and said, "Bernie, yeah, are you Jewish?" I said, "Why are you asking?" "Well, there's a rabbi standing next to you here in the hallway." And it was George again. And then I understood all his garments, you know, because when she said he's a rabbi, I understood why he had this little, like, cap on his head, and, you know, his robes and what he was wearing suddenly all made sense. And I've heard voices, too. And I mean that literally, from dead patients as well as from the greater consciousness. I mean, my father died laughing because a voice said to me, while I was out walking the day I knew he was going to die, before I went to visit him, "How did your parents meet?" I said, "I don't know." And the voice said, "Ask your mother when you get to the hospital." So when I walked in, I said, "How did you two meet?" And my mother started telling stories, which led to my father dying laughing. Because he lost, I mean, just so you understand, it started with he lost the coin toss and had to take her out. And it got worse after that. I mean, why they kept dating, I have no idea. But, you know, he died looking wonderful. Everybody in the room felt healed. And I've had those kinds of experiences that just, you know, as I say, they're experiences. So I know that that consciousness is there. And even just so people understand on another level, I have an animal intuitive friend. I didn't believe in that either. Okay. But I met her at a non-kill conference I was participating in California. Her name is Amelia Kincaid. And she said she's an animal intuitive. And I thought, yeah, that's nice, lady, but it's nuts. You talk to animals. A cat disappears. Our home has always been a zoo. A cat disappears at home. Somebody left the door open. So I said, "Okay, Amelia, I'm in Connecticut. She's in Los Angeles. Tell me where the cat is." After a day or two, I got an extensive email describing the house in detail, all the other pets. I mean, veterinarian's first name. I mean, just totally bizarre. But what I didn't understand was the cat's under the house. But I go out the next day and I'm screaming the cat's name. All the other pets are looking at me like I'm insane. But what do I hear from under a stairway coming off the side of the house that is down to the ground, like a cage would be? That's where the cat was protecting herself. And she called, you know, out to me after I kept screaming her name. And then the other day, to make you a real believer, I'm working in the basement cleaning out the house. One of our cats I can't find, I presume, is in the basement. But no matter how many times I open the basement, turn the lights on, and call her name, she doesn't come out. I call Amelia. I'm missing a cat. And it was interesting. Amelia said, could she be in the garage? Because she described the basement with all the boxes and bags, all the stuff left over from the kids. And, you know, I knew the cat's got to be in the basement. I had to go out of the house, so I left. A minute after I leave the house, the cat cried from the basement. My wife went down and got her. And then I realized the cat didn't want me to know she was in the basement because you're not supposed to be there. So she didn't want to let me know she was breaking the rules. Because I have learned from Amelia to quiet my mind and get into the animal's mind. But in this case, all I kept getting was just a blank. You know, not a feeling that she's dead or something happened, but just, you know, like looking at a blackboard that nobody's written anything on. Right. And I'd say that's the key over and over again, the still pond. So that you see your reflection, you know yourself, you can communicate on another level. I mean, the common themes I find are the ones that I rely on and trust because more than one person has seen how useful they can be.
And we have been talking with Dr. Bernie Siegel. His latest book is called The Art of Healing, Uncovering Your Inner Wisdom and Potential for Self-Healing. Dr. Siegel's website is BernieSiegelMD.com, and that's Bernie, B-E-R-N-I-E, Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L-M-D.com. There's more to come. Stay with us. We're going to go to a break. We come back. We're going to talk a lot more about non-local consciousness and healing with Dr. Bernie Siegel. So stay with us.
Don't miss Forever Family Foundation's 7th Annual Conference Weekend, November 9th and 10th, this year in warm and sunny San Diego, California. In Search of the Afterlife, Experiencing, Communicating, Connecting to Another World, is designed for general audiences interested in learning about evidence of an afterlife. Attendees will be treated to cutting-edge presentations of evidence that we survive our physical deaths, as well as demonstrations of spirit communication by certified mediums. Add on the optional Friday night fundraiser dinner featuring medium Kim Russo, host of The Haunting of TV show, and stay an extra day for Media Monday. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death, heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word.
Learning to Dance in the Rain, a true story about life beyond death. When 21-year-old Maya dies in a tragic car crash, her parents begin to experience profound synchronicities, prophetic dreams, guidance from mediums, and the undeniable truth that death is not the end. Lori and Brian McDermott share their story, hoping to help others find strength and inspiration to face whatever storms life may bring. Learn more about this important book at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. That's www.learningtodanceintherain.net.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Bernie Siegel. Our sponsor is Learning to Dance in the Rain, a book by Lori and Brian McDermott, and they can be found at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. We also want to welcome one of our newest business members, Dr. Piero Calvi Parisetti, and we have a few other announcements before we get back to the show. There are three ways you can show us you like Signs of Life Radio. The first one is go to Signs of Life Radio on Facebook and like us. Two, use the donate button on any of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space to add a comment on what you love and what you don't like so much about the show. And three, remember us when you shop. Yes, when you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all. First, you will need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time that card is used, a portion of the charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in the more than 1,300 online stores like Adobe, CheapTickets.com, Radio Shack, Yoga Accessories, and Zales, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. The original annual Afterlife Conference, our seventh, will be held this year in beautiful and warm San Diego, California, at the DoubleTree by Hilton Golf Resort, November 9th and 10th. Mark the dates. This will be the best one ever. They usually are. They get better and better each year. Make your plans now to be there for the Friday night banquet featuring Kim Russo, star of the hit TV series The Haunting of. She'll be bringing through communication from the other side for all those in attendance following a delicious plated dinner. Then the conference begins early Saturday morning through Sunday evening, including featured presentations by Dr. Diane Powell, Tom and Lisa Butler, Dr. Jeffrey Tarrant, research medium Janet Mayer, Dr. Stephen Browdy, and Lloyd Auerbach, with spirit communication demonstrations from certified mediums Laura Lynn Jackson and Angelina Diana. And as a special add-on this year, we bring you Medium Monday. So check the website for registration information and make your reservations now. Our Holidays Past raffle is in full swing, and the drawing is just around the corner on December 23rd. Win a one-hour phone reading with one of our certified mediums in this raffle, Dave Campbell, Eliza Ray, Nancy Marlowe, Tracy Lee Nash, and Catherine Nadal. It's only $5 a chance. Our annual December Holidays Past events are scheduled for Natick, Massachusetts, with medium Suri Bernstein on December 7th, Pompton Lakes, New Jersey, with medium Janet Nohavik on December 14th, and on December 21st, it's Angelina Diana in South Windsor, Connecticut, and Amy Utzman in Fort Myers, Florida. Reservations and information pages are now up on the Forever Family Foundation website, and email notifications have gone out. Back to you, Bob.
Okay, then that's a mouthful. We are back with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Bernie is the author of his latest book, The Art of Healing. There's a terrific website that you should go to. It's BernieSiegelMD.com. Bernie and Siegel is SIEGELMD.com. Before we run out of time, I know there's a lot of people that were waiting to talk. Let's squeeze in another call for Dr. Siegel.
Right. We have Chuck holding on line three. He's from Arizona.
Okay. Hello, Chuck.
Hi, Bob and Fran. This is Chuck Sweetrock.
Hi, how are you?
Chuck, how are you?
How are you, Chuck? You're on with Dr. Siegel.
Right. I'm with IONS, the International Association for Near-Death Studies, and I'm so glad to hear about Dr. Siegel, you coming out with this, acknowledging your near-death experience at age 4. I found it in the foreword you wrote for the book by Kalen Stoller and his father. People can read online at Amazon.
Yeah.
The question is, what we find we find in our studies is that people who've had near-death experiences, especially as a child, start to be more, have more paranormal gifts. So I think a lot of what you say about your life after that stems from that initial near-death experience.
That's interesting. Yeah. Because I loved all the things you were doing, the spontaneous, what doctors call spontaneous remissions, the whole book on that, and many other things that, just supported all the things I was doing. So it meant a lot to me to be connected with you.
And you didn't have the name for it back when you had your NDE.
Something you talked about, but. Right. The thing I found that was so difficult was so many doctors would say to me, I can't accept that, when I would tell them something that we couldn't explain. But, as I said, that's why I live not by beliefs, but by experience. you know, I say the astronomers and quantum physicists are mystics also, because they don't know how we all got here. And we have to see life as that mystery and keep exploring it and keep our minds open to it all. I mean, I have a quote on my desk. You know, we talked about my being a Jungian surgeon. From Jung, the secret unrest gnaws at the roots of our being. And listening to, what's his name, Johnny Cash sing a song, it ended with, "What is the truth?" And boy, that sentence said a lot to me at the end of the song. You know, we need to keep our minds open to find out what is the truth. And it's,
and
you know, and that's
why
I use the term making the invisible visible, you know, bringing forth what we cannot see until we get into this other level of consciousness where we speak through symbols, not through words.
And what would you say to encourage people who've had these experiences or are working in this area trying to get, you know, the awareness up there, who are meeting lots of resistance, especially from their families or from others?
Well, that's the hard part. They say when you're sitting in a room full of people who have these experiences and the door shut, you know, like group therapy or parents who have coming together for, you know, compassionate friends to help each other, that's when all these stories come pouring out, because they're not afraid to share. They know they're safe in that room. And I think that's the important part, to bring together all these people in an environment where they feel safe and can discuss it. Because when something happens, then the others are converted. I mean, it's hard not to give you an example. We had a woman whose daughter was murdered. Her daughter loved birds, and she was saying the other daughter had gotten married at an outdoor wedding, and a bird disrupted the whole wedding, and everybody's sense was, oh, it's your daughter. What flies in the open window into the room we're sitting in? A bird, while she's talking. I mean, we sit in that room for 5 years. No bird has ever even bumped into the window. And everybody's reaction was, oh, your daughter's here. And I know people who took photographs at a wedding after an accident led to the death of the father and the brother of the groom and bride. And they had these disposable cameras were for everybody. There were like a cloud, you know, like a figure in the photographs people took. And they all started calling the family to say, look what was in my picture. And everybody's sense was it's the father and the brother who were at the wedding. So, you know, like the first call we had this evening about the great, you know, the grandmother. I mean, so when those things happen, everybody's converted. And I'd see, keep telling stories. That's the other thing I learned. Don't try to make it scientific, because then you get into conflict and arguments about, you know, that's not a controlled study, that's a lousy journal. But when you tell stories, people can walk out saying, oh, that was an anecdote. They don't. But then if an anecdote happens in their life, they call you up, and then the dialogue starts happening. Say, I got to tell you what happened to me. And then minds open up. So I became a storyteller because I found when I approached all this scientifically, I just got more resistance. And science then catches up with you, if you know what I mean. It can take 20 or 30 years, but then studies get done. So we know how emotions affect genes and, you know, in the organ transplants. Years ago, a woman had a heart-lung transplant. And she called to ask me to come to the intensive care unit to talk to her. She said to me, everybody here thinks I'm crazy. Because I woke up after surgery. They said, what do you want to drink? I said, a beer. And she said, I never drank a beer. Why did I say that? And then she had this incredible desire to drive a motorcycle and did one day. And then in a dream, a young man walks up to her and tells her he's the one whose heart and lungs are in her and that we'll be together forever. And since he said his name, she and her friends searched all the obituaries, found it, and called the family. And they said, yes, he died in a motorcycle accident. He loved beer and chicken McNuggets, which he was eating and drinking. And the day she was on the motorcycle was his birthday. Now, and she wrote a book called The Change of Heart. Now, you can't deny what she had happened. And I think this is what people need to open up to and keep sharing. those kinds of stories, and gradually the change will happen. You know, like the father who wrote the book, Heaven is for Real, when his four-year-old had a near-death experience at the hospital, you know, undergoing surgery. And he thinks his son's nuts until his son starts telling him about who he met and you know, that the father knows it, he's speaking the truth, so he can't deny it anymore. Right. And was open-minded enough to accept it.
Yeah. Well, Chuck, thank you for calling in, and keep up the good work.
Right. Thanks, Bob.
All right. Take care. You know, Bernie, well, I know we're nearing the end of our time, but I had to mention, I learned something in reading The Art of Healing that I didn't know, and that's the word patient, you know, was derived from a word meaning submissive sufferer, and the implication being that by being a good patient and you're obeying orders, you're being a good sufferer. And it struck me because I saw the parallel in people who are grieving the loss of a loved one. I mean, people are often judged as to whether or not they're a good griever, you know, if they meet the expectations that others have about them in the grieving process. So being a good patient or a good griever can be harmful sometimes rather than be helpful. You agree
because
with
you
that?
You don't get your needs taken care of. In the hospital, you're more likely to die of a medical error if you're a good patient, because they know you as a room number or a disease, not as a person, so that you can get the wrong treatment. And a few hundred thousand people a year die due to those medical errors. And even in grieving, you know, I meet people, whether they're grieving or have a life-threatening illness, I don't want to bother anybody. You know, I'll keep it to myself. That's not survival behavior. As a matter of fact, on my website is immune-competent personality. See, and one of the survival qualities is I can ask friends and family for help or favors when I need them. So if you're in pain, if you're grieving, if you have a life-threatening illness, ask for help. That's survival behavior. Now, the important thing to remember is the people you ask can say no, just as you can say no to what you don't want to do, so that you're not saying no to yourself all the time. See, if your body gets that message that you're uncomfortable, don't like your life, it'll get you out of here as fast as it can. Monday morning, we have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. See? So your body does not see death as the worst outcome, because you'll be perfect again. So let's get out of here. But if your body knows, I love my life and I love my body, it does all it can to keep you alive. So that's why that term self-induced healing, that when you get into that almost mystical trance-like state of loving your life, time doesn't exist, disease doesn't exist. I mean it. When you do what I call your chocolate ice cream, you know, when you live that, what you love, believe me, you're in a hypnotic state, and you're not sick, and you're not in pain. I know this from personal experience, that I could operate on people. I had injured my back, but I could stand at the operating table or paint a portrait for hours with no pain. But when it was done, boom, I'm on the floor. And that impressed me. You know, how I could do these things, because I was creating and caring for others. So find a way to contribute love to the world as well as to yourself. Create a shrine in your home. Put pictures of yourself, especially children, you know, as a child, around the house, and love yourself. I mean, one other story, I was born an ugly duckling. My mother was quite ill, wasn't supposed to get pregnant, couldn't survive a cesarean section. By the time they dragged me out, my mother said they handed me a purple melon, not a child. And, I mean, I learned that as an adult. And I said, why am I not a drug addict or an alcoholic? Because she said, we hid you behind the house in a covered carriage. That's when I looked and realized the pictures in the family album were of a covered carriage, not of me. But I had a grandmother, you see. She saved my life. Because, to quote my mother, she poured oil all over you and pushed everything back where it belonged 5 and 6 times a day. Again, see the memories in your body. 50 years later, for the first time, not the first massage of my bare-shaved head, but for the first time by a woman, because the guy was busy, so he asked if I could let his wife massage me. I said, fine. I opened my eyes, and there are 6 people in the room. I said, what the hell are you doing here? I'm getting massage. We thought you had a heart attack or a stroke. We couldn't communicate with you. I said, I know. I became a child an infant again because of a woman's hands with oil. That taught me also about body memories. It was incredible. I know what happened to me. I became that infant, but it scared the hell out of everybody else because I was gone.
Well, I mean, and that's the, just as our cells have memory, not only do our cells have memory, and you talked about the transplants, we have the ability to tap into the memory that exists in these other fields of consciousness.
Yeah.
Bernie, we could obviously talk for hours.
Well, let me use one line you said that we're almost running out of time, because I always like to finish with this. We're all going to run out of time someday, so enjoy your lifetime.
Couldn't end on a better note. We have been talking with Dr. Bernie Siegel. The book, The Art of Healing, I know there's an Amazon link to that on our website. Visit Bernie's website, BernieSiegelMD.com, SiegelMD.com. Bernie, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We hope you'll come back and visit us again sometime.
All right.
And happy Halloween.
Thank you, Bob and Fran. All right.
Thank you.
Good night.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Leanne Ashley, David Mello, Phyllis Alexander, Betty Alexander, Ann Hutchinson, John Cahali, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel S., Jeanette Davias, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Miriam Pierzka, Flora Prisco, Stanley Newland, Julie B., Glenna Irwin, Barbara Patillo, David Hayes, Rita Springer, Eileen Lafata, Mark Varon, Wendy Lippo, Vicki Steffi, Barbara Russell, Tim Donahue, and Francis Mastrasso. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. To love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.